Hello and welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast that brings you animal facts, wildlife updates and nature stories from the professionals to you. Ah, there's one in the bath! Get the glass and paper! These are two sentences many of us shout from time to time when we see one in our house. But fear is not what our guest this week has when they are faced with spiders. Spider scientist and nature communicator Sebastian Echeverry joins me to discuss the wonderful world of spiders. From what makes a spider to what doesn't make a spider, to answering the questions of are they all venomous, how many are there, and where can we find them, Sebastian leaves no spider-loving stone unturned. So thanks so much for tuning in, and enjoy the show. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining me on today's show of Into the Wild. How are you doing? How was your day?
Yeah, hi Ryan. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I am super excited to be here and talk spiders. Just ready to get into it.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about spiders. This is really fascinating. This is an animal that I love. A few people don't, but I feel like you're going to change some hearts in this episode.
I hope so. That's always my goal when I talk about spiders.
So let's start at the top with Into the Wild, as we always do, with you telling us who you are and what is it you do.
Yeah, my name is Sebastian Echeverry. I am a spider scientist. I just completed my PhD, and I study why and how animals, in my case jumping spiders, get their audience's attention when they're trying to use vision to communicate. So in my case, these jumping spiders are about to throw down some amazing dance moves, and they need to make sure that their audience is paying attention. And that is literally what I spent 6 years or so studying.
Okay, so, right, let's put the brakes on a minute quite early on. Sorry, you study jumping spiders who throw some pretty epic shapes.
Yes. Yeah, so jumping spiders, their courtship for a lot of species is a dance performance. And it's not just a dance, it is a full musical, so they are also singing through the ground. But for a lot of them, they're waving their arms and they're moving back and forth. And they're like showing and hiding different parts of their bodies, some of which have colors and like ornaments on them. And it's a wonderful thing to watch. But of course, like with anything, if your audience is not paying attention to you and not looking at you, that's going to change how much they're going to get out of it. And so I was really interested in how they solve that problem. Have they evolved to handle that situation?
So jumping spiders are like the flamenco dancers of the spider world.
Yes.
With a good audience.
Yes, absolutely. They, to be fair, the males will dance, like, a lot of my experiment, they will dance to, like, most things that resemble a living female. Like, I have plenty of videos of males just dancing for, like, 20 minutes, 30 minutes to a dead female that we've, like, kind of propped up, you know, like, on a stick, and she's just kind of sitting there. And, like, he'll go, and he's like, all right, this is, you know, maybe she's really tired, whatever, I'm going to just dance. She's staring straight ahead, perfect audience, you know, they go for it. So they're not super smart. Well, they are smart in other ways, but in this specific thing, the cutoff is super low. But the performance itself, when you, like, actually get the whole thing, it is amazing. And, in fact, that's seeing that for the first time, seeing a jumping spider dance for the first time, is what got me into spiders and, like, where I started getting excited about them and learning to love them.
That's hilarious that they'll dance to a dead female.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's great.
That's like
I enjoy playing that video in talks because it's really funny.
From a comedian that's been at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, I know what playing to a dead audience is like. So I feel like I'm on par with the jumping spiders. That's amazing.
Yeah, one of the experiments that I've done is actually take the spider. So I have my little like female propped up dead female. And we've built a little setup that we can, like, turn her to face towards or away the male. And one of the saddest things to do is to have a male, like, you let the female just, like, stare at him, and he starts dancing. He's like, yeah, she's paying attention. He'll go into, like, the second half of his dance, which is the more complicated part. And then you turn the female away to face completely away from him. And you see the male, like, sometimes they just keep trying to go immediately, like, try and get her attention to get her to turn around. And sometimes they, like, kind of peer to the side, like, hey, I'm still over here. I'm still over here. It's, yeah.
Sebastian,
that is actually, like, one of the, that's one of the published experiments I have. And it's pretty funny, I'm going to be honest.
The more you explain what you do for a living, Sebastian, the more morbid it gets.
There's a lot of behavioral science when you're trying to figure out what an animal does.
Amazing.
Some of the experiments to do that get complicated.
That's incredible.
You can ask them, right?
And that's interesting to say that's how you got into spiders, because mm-hmm. it's interesting when we're doing these interviews and these chats to hear about how people got into wildlife and stuff. And that's such a specific moment for you. But now spiders are your thing, but they're not everyone. So you say about the jumping spiders that got you into it, but was there anything else about the spider world that drew you in?
Yeah, well, so jumping spiders were the stand, like the jumping off point, if you will.
Nice.
The way that they interact with the world is very similar to how we do, and so it's really easy to kind of get in their head and empathize with them and like kind of see what they're thinking.
That's interesting.
And that really helps me and a lot of other people kind of appreciate them. But once I got into okay, I'm gonna learn about spiders in general, every new spider that I meet is like meeting a new superhero, because there are so many different types of spiders. They've adapted to so many different environments, they've evolved so many cool abilities.
Yeah,
every new one, it's like it blows my mind. And so now that I'm like doing a lot more like outreach work where I'm sharing not just about jumping spiders, but other spiders. Like, it's a journey of discovery that is so exciting. Whenever I meet a new spider in person or just read about a new one and I'm like, oh, I gotta go see what this animal is like in real life. They're fascinating. I like to say, you know, for all of Spider-Man's superpowers, there is a real life spider out there that is just doing that.
That's amazing.
All day, all the time, it's just out there. You can go see it. And there are even spiders that can do things that Spider-Man can't. And so, like, they've got everything if you give them a minute. It's great.
That's hilarious, though, as well, that spiders are out there having no idea that we franchise the F out of what they do.
Oh, yeah. And they don't get anything back from, right? Like,
no, I mean, nothing.
Like, I think there's some, like, goodwill, but, like, it gets this interesting question of, like, you know, like, a lot of brands and comic book heroes and stuff use an animal as their figurehead. You know, you got, like, the Geico Gecko and other things, and, like, the Coca-Cola Polar Bear, where they're using this animal as, like, this is the thing, you like this animal, it has Coca-Cola next to it. You like Coca-Cola now. But a lot of there's very little return of that, like, in, you know, return of that benefit to the animal. So, like, you know, Geico doesn't run a gecko conservation society as far as I know.
I think that's fair to say.
Coca-Cola. And as far as I know, Spider-Man does not, you know, the Marvel is not out there funding spider outreach. Now, don't get me wrong, I use Marvel Spider-Man to talk about spiders for people, and in that way, it's really helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, these we as people go out there and go into the natural world and get cool ideas and inspirations and stuff, and then we sell it back to other humans. And we don't really always pause to say, thank you. Oh, yeah, if we want to have more ideas in the future, we need to take some of that money and put it back into nature, because otherwise that well of ideas is going to run out.
And that's a good point as well. And I think, A, if Marvel are doing it, they're not talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not doing it, like other companies, they should be. So, you know what, when I release this episode, and I'm going to commit to this, let's tweet Marvel and see what they're committed to do to spider research with the billions.
That sounds great.
Not just Marvel, it's now Disney. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got a whole monopoly.
Yeah.
So back to spiders, proper spiders. No offence, Spider-Man or Tom Holland. But let's talk about what makes a spider a spider. How can we tell what is a spider, Sebastian?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and one that I get a lot, because like there's a lot of misconceptions. And in fact, I'll start with what a spider isn't. A spider is not an insect. So this is a thing that comes up a lot. People group insects and spiders, they call them all bugs, like they're the same kind of type of animal. But the reality of it is way more interesting. And the way that I like to think about it is like this. You, whoever is listening to this podcast, is probably a human. And you, a human, are more closely related to dogs, fish, birds, sharks, all non-avian dinosaurs, salamanders, and basically any animal with a backbone. You are more closely related to all of those animals than any spider is to any insect, or any arachnid is to any insect, for that matter. So the last common ancestor, last time humans and sharks shared DNA, was about 470-ish million years ago.
Yeah.
And the last time that arachnids and insects shared DNA, their last common ancestor, the last time they were related, was over 500 million years ago. Give or take a few million years, because that far back it's fuzzy. You know, these animals, spiders are their own unique, weird, wonderful branch of life. Yeah. And if you look closely at them, you'll see their body is shaped differently from that of insects. Their physiology, like the way they work, is radically different. They're doing their own thing, and they're doing a great job of it. But they are their own type of animals. If there's one thing to remember, arachnids, not insects. In fact, things like crabs and crustaceans and like that, those are actually the closest relative to insects.
Yeah.
Are like crustaceans.
That's amazing.
And they're all like far less related to arachnids than they are to each other. I talked about a little bit about what spiders weren't, but just a quick description of what a spider actually looks like when you take a close look at it.
Yes.
So a spider, when you take a close look, you'll see that one of the things that makes them really different from other animals their size is they have two big sections of their body. They have their head, and then they have their abdomen at the back. And the abdomen is actually where most of the important organs are. You've got your hearts there, you've got your lungs, your digestive system, reproductive system, your spinnerets. And then the head has the brain, the eyes, and like a little like kind of suction straw-like mouth. And it's also where all of the legs are attached.
Okay.
So if you ever like see a spider drawn, a lot of our cartoons and kind of, you know, art of spiders, you can tell whether or not the person actually looked at a spider to come up with that, because you'll see legs in the wrong places. In fact, the original Spider-Man logo, when it first came out, does not depict a spider because all of the legs are attached to the abdomen, which there is no spider that looks like that. But they also have two pedipalps that are kind of like arms that, like, if you look at a spider up close, you'll see they have these little things kind of like in front of their face.
Yeah.
And those are the pedipalps. Those are, they use them for a lot of other things, but they are separate from the legs. So especially for some things like tarantulas, where the pedipalps look really similar to legs, you'll think, oh, that spider has 10 legs. It has 10 limbs, 8 of which are legs, 2 of which are pedipalps. And all spiders have that. And I think now if you add to your mental picture of a spider two like tiny finger-like things on their abdomen, the spinnerets, which make silk, you've now got all the important parts of that animal put there together.
Okay, so that's amazing. But where can we find spiders around the world as well?
So spiders are basically everywhere around the world. And they are, like I said, there's so many of them that they've spread to all these different types of habitats.
Yeah.
So you can find spiders basically on every single continent except for Antarctica, though they've made it there through the human, like, research stations and little...
Of course.
...human broadband spiders in the corner. And they, on all the other continents, they are in habitats from deserts to grasslands, forests, jungles. There are spiders that live underwater in freshwater ecosystems that spend their entire lives underwater. Yeah, the diving bell spider only ever comes to the surface to get more air for its diving bell. Otherwise, lives entirely underwater.
Oh my god.
They are so cool, and I want to meet one so badly, but they are only in Europe and Asia, and... Yeah. And therefore, I can't meet one right now. but they're awesome.
Amazing.
And yeah, so they live in freshwater, and then there are also spiders that live in like at the edge of saltwater. So spiders that live at like the edge of the ocean in tidal zones that spend half of their day submerged in saltwater, and then half of their day, you know, when the tide goes out, you've got spiders going from there all the way up to one of the highest points on Earth. So there are spiders. There's a jumping spider that is the highest permanent resident on Earth. That is, it lives on the slopes of Mount Everest. And its Latin name is Iofris Omni Superstes, which means the spider that stands above everything. And that is where it lives. It is, I think we talked, I was trying to remember the number. It was, I think, 6,700 meters above sea level is where they've been found. Jeez. And they are just up there surviving on insects that are blown up by the winds from lower elevation. But they're there all, you know, year round. Cold-blooded jumping spider, just eking it out right at the edge.
And their name means the spider that stands above everything else.
Yeah, Omni Superstes means standing above all, and then Iofris is the name of the genus, which is something about that type of jumping spider.
They're probably the most arrogant spider going, just the most big-headed kind of, you know, I'm at the top
now. Oh yeah, I mean, they literally look down upon the world, you know?
I absolutely love that. So when you've described so many species just in where we can find them, but is there an approximate how many species of spider live on this wonderful planet we call Earth?
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot to mention it. Yeah, we're at about 48,000 species that we have described, which means scientists have studied them and said, this is what makes this species special, and this is how you tell it apart.
Mm.
But we think that there are even more, maybe even double that number out there yet to be discovered.
Wow, that's amazing.
So 48,000 that we know about now, and maybe 100,000, somewhere between 50 to 100,000 total, including the ones that are out there yet to be fully discovered.
That's incredible. That's just, when I hear this about animals, it's just numbers that I can't comprehend. Like, in my brain, I'm just like, wait a minute, 48,000 different types. And different, like, they
it's kind of wild.
Yeah, it's just like, they're all different. They're all different, Sebastian.
Yeah. And, like, that's the thing where, like, when you get into, like, learning about spiders, you know, like a lot of people are, like, really into bird watching, and you can get really good at, like, okay, I've learned all the birds that live here. I can ID them by sound, sight, and everything. But you realize that these, you know, you could, there's a good amount of birds out there, but in any one area, you might have maybe a couple hundred. If you're really lucky, you have like 100 to 200 bird species, you know. I would say at least in most areas of the US and the UK, that's like getting up there. And there are way more spider species, which makes it even all the more impressive when you meet someone who can like ID everything out. Because sometimes they are so, it will be so hard to tell what species you have without like observing it under a microscope. And so it's a really impressive skill of like actually being able to figure out what spider you're looking at. I'm still like, I can get you to kind of the group of the spiders unless like for a few that I know kind of well.
Yeah.
But there's some that are like, you know, that's a fun thing. Like every now and then you see a spider and just like, I didn't know that was a thing, you know? it's like, every other day you saw like a parrot for the first time and you're like, parrots are real? Like that's a bird can look like it can do what?
So you're saying
it's that sort of amount of like,
there's so much discovery with spiders. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That's such an amazing thing to have from a type of animal. A question that we've had in from someone that wants to know this, are all spiders venomous? Do they all have venom?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I would say the vast majority are. So the vast majority of spiders are venomous, which means that they have fangs. That's one of the things that makes them special. They have the two fangs in front of their body, and those are little syringes, and they inject a little toxin when they bite something, and that helps them catch their food. They are not poisonous, so a poisonous animal is when something, if you took a bite out of it, it would make you sick.
Cool.
But, you know, plenty of people, you can eat a spider, and apart from that, however uncomfortable that might make you feel emotionally, it's not, doesn't have anything that'll make you sick. But there are a few groups of species that have actually evolved to not have venom. That is, they've lost the ability to make venom at some point in their ancestry, and they just don't. So the most common that people might be able to find are the feather-legged orb weavers, the Ouliborids. They have these big tufts on their, like, front legs, and they build webs and everything, but they don't have venom, so they will still bite a prey item, but they kind of have to wait for it to, and they'll, like, wrap it and entangle it in their silk, but they'll have to basically just wait for it to pass away before going in to feed, and it may take a little longer than other species, but they seem to be getting along fine. And that's the thing about venom. The reason spiders have it is to catch their food. Like the venom itself has specifically evolved to kill the things that spiders eat.
Yes.
And so even though basically the vast majority of spiders do have venom, the venom has evolved to kill little insects and other spiders around the same size as the spider itself. And so most venom just doesn't work on people because we are so much bigger and our bodies are built, like, they work differently.
Yeah, that
like
makes sense.
The biochemistry of our bodies are so different.
Mm.
And so while many, again, the vast majority of spiders have venom, very few spiders have venom that actually works on people.
Okay.
That it will actually do anything when the spider bites you besides, like, give you, like, a small little bump, you know? And that's a really cool thing because that means that in many places, you have to know about maybe one or two species that might be potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
And then every other spider you see, you can interact with, observe, you know, experience it without worrying that venom could require a doctor's visit.
So when we look at spiders and their role in ecosystems as well, and this will likely change, or it might have similarities across many species, how important are spiders to the environment that they live in?
Oh, crucial.
Oh, wow.
Spiders fill this really important link between the ecosystems of tiny animals and the ecosystems of bigger animals.
Mm.
So at around their size, spiders are some of the top predators. They can, like I said, they're great hunters. They've evolved all these cool different ways to hunt. And they eat a lot of insects, other arachnids, and like very tiny, really, really small vertebrates sometimes. But they're really eating a lot of those insects and arachnids and controlling the population of those animals. So they are, in a lot of environments, like keeping all the pest insects from eating all the plants, basically.
Yeah.
Because the more insects there are, that can support a higher spider population, and those keep those numbers in check. And then at the same time, for animals a little bigger than spiders, so like anything from like the size of like a mouse to a small bird to like, you know, like a possum or something like that.
Yeah.
Spiders are an amazing food source because their venom, for the most part, won't work on those animals because, again, venom works on the things that the spiders eat. And spiders are pretty soft, so that it's not like an ant that has like a hard exoskeleton or a beetle. Most spiders, they're pretty soft. Like, they're not physically that tough.
Mm.
And so it's an easy meal if they can grab the spider. And they're everywhere. And so for a lot of these animals, they rely on spiders as an important percentage of their diet. And it gives them a lot of varied nutrition because that the spiders themselves are eating a bunch of different animals. And so they hit this like really critical link connecting energy from tiny animals all the way up to bigger things. That they're cool. And like even there's also like other kind of side things where like some animals actually use spider byproducts. So spider webs are actually used by a couple different birds, mostly like tiny hummingbirds. Yeah. And they'll actually rely on spider webs to build their nests.
What?
And so they it's like it is one of the more aggressively adorable things that sounds fake, but there are hummingbirds that collect spider webs specifically to build their nests because the material is so strong and it has antibacterial properties and it's sticky, so it's easy to like this together. So yeah, they're doing a lot of important work out there.
Amazing. And how are spiders doing in regards to numbers around the world? I know we focus on the big mammals, we focus on the birds, we focus on the marine animals, but very rarely in conservation we hear about spiders. But how are their numbers doing globally?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up, this bias that we have in research and as people, just emotionally towards these big fuzzy animals. It means that we don't know a lot about spider populations for a lot of species. There are several cases where we know that few species are endangered, but for a lot of these like 50,000 species, there's no data because there's no money to fund scientists to see how many spiders are in this area. Is this population healthy? Are they at risk of going extinct?
Mm.
And so as a group, like all spiders everywhere, there are spiders out there. I'm not worried about spiders as a order of life going away, but there are many amazing species that are likely at risk. And these are both species that are in areas that their habitats are being destroyed.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of really cool species, especially in the tropics, or that have really specific habitats that they've evolved to live in.
Mm.
And if those habitats are destroyed for development and things like that, like the plant that they live in is destroyed, or this type of, I know, in North America, we're having cases here where lots of burrowing spiders that need like kind of undisturbed soil that is becoming rarer and rarer as, you know, you have more farmland. Those are declining in numbers. So that's one thing. Habitat destruction is affecting a lot of these spiders out there. I wish I could give you more numbers. It's just we don't know.
Mm.
One of the few places where we have a lot of documentation is on tarantulas.
Okay.
Because they are at risk also from habitat destruction, but from the pet trade.
Oh,
so
that makes sense.
A lot of people, including myself, really enjoy keeping tarantulas as pets because they're pretty easy to care for the most part. They are fascinating, fun animals. Some of them are like gorgeously colorful.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is that, you know, these pets have to come from somewhere, and it often people will, there is a trade in illegally collecting them from the wild and selling them, exporting them to often Western countries and selling them in pet shops instead of selling babies that have hatched in captivity, which is thankfully for a lot of species, there are babies available. But for some, it's still cheap enough to just get them out of the wild and export them that people are doing so because, I mean, and pet stores, it's cheaper for them to do that than to pay a breeder to get their little babies. I mean, this is the other problem. Tarantulas take forever to grow. That's part of how they get so big. They grow really slowly and they live a long time. And so if you're a person who doesn't know a lot about spiders, but you want a big spider as a pet, you know, that spider that you get that's a big spider could be like a decade old. Pet stores often don't, you know, have a breeder that's been raising that spider for 10 years is going to ask more than someone who just caught it out of the wild. But then that means that those wild populations, you're taking adults out of there, and very few tarantulas in the wild make it to that age.
Yeah.
Because they are animals that have evolved a strategy of having a ton of babies, and unlike us, they don't spend most species. There are actually a few that care for their babies kind of in their childhood, but a lot of the time those babies are just kind of fending for themselves, and a lot of things like they eat spiders, as we talked about, so most of them don't make it. So there's only a few animals out there. You're taking adults. They're no longer making more spiders in the wild, and it is this like really tough system. So there are a couple of species that are, the few species that are listed on like the IUCN Red List or other conservation lists of like, we got to protect this spider, are often spiders that are at risk of being collected from the wild. So the orange kneed tarantulas from Mexico are a great example. And the peacock or parachute tarantulas from India are also incredibly gorgeous, but another example of spiders that are often taken out of the wild. There's a lot of problems with that, that kind of with the tarantula hobby, of especially through pet stores. That is kind of one of the worst streams of that, where a lot of these wild caught animals get funneled to. Because, you know, that's what sells faster, and then they're not taking the step to consider what is an ethical way to have this animal. So it's a big problem, and for the most part, it's less regulated. Like, again, there's those few species that are listed, and there's actually a really cool model where Mexico, the country, is actually has a government breeding program of some of their species. They are now officially breeding and then selling exported babies across the world to control the trade of that species and still provide it for people who, like, want to care for that animal and, like, have it in their lives, but in a way that they are tracking all the numbers and they know that they are releasing also some individuals back into the wild to make sure the species survives later on, which is a really cool thing that I hope, you know, gets implemented by other countries around the world.
And I think that's an important part to add, is whenever we're talking about any animal population around the world, whether it's animals that are affected by habitat loss through the pet trade, through hunting, through literally any, or tourism, anything to, at all, it always comes down to making sure what angle you go down is a responsible route and doing more research rather than this blanket of approach of I want that, I get that, no matter what aspect we're looking at. It involves that bit more research to make sure that, you know, things are being done to ensure that it is ethical and it is regulated. I think that's the key word that we look for a lot with animal populations. That's a really fascinating approach, because also when we're looking at the pet trade, it is, you don't want to take it away from people, because although the pet trade has its issues, it's still something that draws the love of spiders to people. So if people can't keep them, we're going to lose that love, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important. You know, I've heard a lot of stories, especially in the people who are vocal in the kind of tarantula keeping community. They didn't know a lot about spiders. They might have been scared about them. And maybe they got a tarantula for the wrong reasons, but like keeping them and like having this connection with a spider, feeding it, taking care of it, watching it grow, you know, learning more about them, builds this really nice positive association, positive interactions with spiders, which a lot of us don't have in the media or in our daily lives. And this is one of the few ways that you can get that. And they're cool pets. They're like really cool animals. And a lot of those people then go on to tell their friends, oh, actually, you know, the tarantula is not that scary. It's a really cool animal. Here, come check it out. And like, you can have that if the culture is one that is tarantula, that is taking the animal's welfare and their wild populations into account, that can be a really powerful force
for
kind of slowly changing our perceptions of these animals. I think that it's really important. And it's the same thing with, like, you know, any sort of regulation question of you know, banning something outright. That illegal capture of these spiders is already illegal. And that demand is there for people to have them as pets. And so if you ban it outright, I mean, the people who are illegally capturing them from the wild are still going to illegally capture them from the wild. It's just that's going to be the only source. But if you find a way to work that into a system where you are using that demand to both help the spiders and the people who want them, then, you know, everyone wins, basically. It's an important thing that I feel like we have to look at. I mean, we've done it for a lot of other pet industries, right? Like, people know now that puppy mills are a horrible way to get a dog, that it's an unethical way to breed dogs, and it ends up giving you a bad pet dog. And we have that kind of common understanding, I think, for a lot of people. It's just we need to have that conversation about other animals too.
Sebastian, if you could pass on one bit of advice to everyone regarding the natural world, what would you say?
I'm so excited for this because this one is easy. You can do it right now and it will make your quarantine future life all the more exciting. It's really simple. Take a walk, go outside, and look at the tiny world around you. Don't look for birds. They're cool. Take a minute. Look through the flowers. Look what's on bushes. Crouch down. Because you will be surprised at the diversity of life that you can find in your yard, on the side of your house, in your local park. You'll be able to find, and I say this pretty confidently, dozens, if not hundreds, of different species of life. Each looking radically different. Each with its own weird behaviors. Each with its own, like, fascinating interactions with other animals. That's just there. It's free entertainment, free wonders and questions waiting for you. And it's just waiting for you to look. You might need a magnifying glass or, like, a little clip-on macro lens for your phone, which you can get on the internet for, like, $15 or so.
Yeah.
And that's it. Just take a look at these animals, because I grew up in a big city. I grew up in New York City. And I always felt like nature was something out there. It was really far away. You know, it was elephants in Africa or, you know, anacondas in South America. That's where all the cool animals were. And for a long time, I just, like, you know, that's all I could experience. And I watched documentaries and I was like, oh, that's cool. Someday I'll get to go there. And this entire time, I was living around, like, incredibly cool spiders. I mean, I found it in my heart. Around my house, several, like, when I went back home to where I live in New York, several species of jumping spiders, pseudoscorpions, bunches of different types of ants, really cool shiny beetles, several species of bees. Like, this is just stuff that was, like, in front of my house on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
That had my brain been open to that possibility, I would have realized, oh, no, nature's right here.
Yeah.
The wild, into the wild is outside your front door. And that's what I want everyone to take away from this.
Amazing. I think you've just given our show a new tagline, that Into the Wild is right out on your front door. That is probably the best. Why have I never thought about that?
It's part of your perception. Once you include small life, arthropods, insects, arachnids, into your idea of what the wild is, the wild is wherever you want it to be. These animals are out there. They are adapting to our ecosystems. They're just doing all their cool behaviors right there. You just gotta stop and look.
Sebastian, thank you so much for joining me on today's show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you about something that is so clearly your passion. And it's so interesting to hear about all the different types of spiders, about where they live, what they do, and what, you know, people need to do to help them as well. I wish you all the best for the rest of the year, and I'll keep in touch with you.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of your day there in Pittsburgh.
You too.
Thanks again for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date with Sebastian's upcoming projects and work, you can do so on Twitter at Spider Day Night and on Instagram at Spider Day Night Live. You can also get in touch with me on social media at Into the Wild Pod on Twitter and Into the Wild Podcast on Instagram. You can also drop me an email at intothewild@gmail.com, whether it's just to say hello, share some thoughts on an episode, or let me know what you want to hear about next. And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, and Podbean. Until next time, keep well, stay safe, and live the good life.